I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts. I've seen the sky so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, 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 hey. It's a sunny day. My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, 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 hey. It's just a sunny day. Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Welcome back to the Greenhouse Show, hour number three now. Dave Meekham sitting in for Maria Chaleos, feeling a little bit under the weather today, and happy to be here with you, Ton, as always.
It's good to be with you, too.
I want to jump in and just start the hour off with a call. John's calling us from Riverton. And John, you've got a grass question. You're dealing with some tall fescue.
Yeah, I think it's called tall fescue. It's that white grass. And we just moved into a house in Riverton. It's all over the place. And I don't know how to control it. I'm thinking I might have to just rip it out and resod half my lawn. Is there a different way I can control this thing?
Well, is it coming up in rounded patches or rounded clumps?
Yeah, a lot of it is, but there is some of it that isn't that way as well.
Well, just because it has a wide blade doesn't automatically make it tall fescue. And so if it's rounded and it has, a circular patch look to it to where it just spreads 6 inches a year, that is the characteristic of tall fescue. And those you would have to just spray out with a glyphosate product, or you could smother them for 3 or 4 weeks, depending on what you want to do. But they would need to be killed before you put new seed or sod down. Now, other areas where you have wide blade grasses, there could be a number of other ones, but the solution for them still is just to kill them out.
Okay. All right. So kill them before I put anything else in there.
Yeah, because if you just go in with new seed, it's most likely whatever was there will take back over.
John, does this grass grow a lot faster than the rest of the grass?
Yeah, it does. It does. It's terrible.
Well, if it's running all over the place in your lawn and it's really wide-bladed, it could be quack grass in these other areas. And if you have quack grass, that is tough or harder to get rid of than field bindweed.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, I don't want to just jump to that one because there's 10 or 15 other things it could be. But if it's really aggressive and you see sprigs coming up everywhere and then it forms a dense turf, that would be quack grass. And you are going to want to spray it out. It may take 3 or 4 tries to totally get rid of it.
Okay. I'm thinking I might have both then. I do have the clumps, the rounded clumps, but then I do have other little bits that pop up in different areas that are further away from these clumps.
Tom, this may be a situation where it's good if he brings in a sample.
Well, we're not, except because of COVID-19,
oh, yeah,
we're not
that's
taking
right.
samples.
I didn't even think about that.
And so maybe some pictures. What I would have him do, if you wanted to submit some pictures, probably submit them to Utah Gardening Experts on Facebook. and let them take a look. But no matter what grass it is, if it's growing in your lawn, the only way you're going to get rid of it is to kill it, because there isn't a spray selective enough
right.
to take one weedy grass out of Kentucky bluegrass.
Okay. All right. Okay. A lot of back-breaking work ahead.
Well, good luck with that, John. And the reason, Tom, that I asked John that question about growing taller, and you and I have talked about this a little bit. I had the same problem in my backyard where I just call it field grass. I don't know exactly what kind of grass it is, but it's a wider blade. It grows much faster than my bluegrass. In the course of a week, it can grow as much as 2 or 3 inches above the bluegrass in between mowings. And I just simply said, okay, this is... I could see how fast it was spreading, and I just ran out and had to hit it with the Roundup. And I've got two kind of big brown spots in my lawn, but I think I've contained that field grass, whatever it was. And this is a problem that I think is common with a lot of our lawns.
It is. And no matter how much you love your lawn, how much you love it too much, you are eventually going to get a weedy grass in it. And I've seen several times people kill out all those tall fescue patches and reseed everything. And within 5 years, the tall fescue is back because it comes in the wind, and it just is what it does. And so if it's a minor problem, I just suggest people mow it, especially if it's not aggressively spreading. Now, if it's aggressively spreading, then you may need to take a look at it because you don't want it in your flower beds. You don't want it the neighbors. But if it's only spreading 6 inches or a foot a year, it might be something that you could get, even go to a construction site and talk to the workers and get a piece of plywood or OSB and drop it right over the top of that grass and smother it out for a month. And then just, you haven't had to use a chemical, and you could just dig it out and go get some sod or seed and reseed it.
Right.
So there's several options, but the take home is that if you have a weedy grass, you've got to kill it, because it just, you can't selectively get it out of bluegrass in most situations.
Right. And the more aggressive it is, the faster you got to act, because some of these can shoot out fast and hard, and before you know it, you've got to take out your entire lawn to get
yeah,
rid of it.
I mean, Bermuda grass, quack grass are two that I would recommend being very proactive. Now, fortunately, with Bermuda grass, it's an exception, and there are a couple of different sprays that'll take Bermuda out of Kentucky bluegrass.
So that's the if you got to have a bad one, I guess that's the one, huh?
Yeah, and it's not super common. Areas of West Weber and West Davis County, it's really common. Areas of Salt Lake County, but Bermuda grass spreads by above ground runners, and when you pull one of the runners, about every 6 inches, you feel a pop. And it just hears a pop, 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 pop as you pull it. And you've got now, instead of having one long runner, you've got 10 different plants.
Right. Yeah, so it's better to spray those things and just be done with it. Or use the plywood trick. That's a good one if you don't want to use chemicals.
Yeah, it works. And it takes a little longer. And people are like, why is that plywood on your lawn? But it's a way to do it. And the glues they're using the plywood are generally biodegradable over time. So my soil microorganisms just break it down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good way to kill small patches of weeds in the lawn if you need to totally kill them.
All right. Well, there you go. So if you've got a problem with invasive grass, you're not alone. And there's some ideas, some strategies to handle it. We're going to jump out and take a break here now on the Greenhouse Show. When we come back, we've got Ben on the line, and Ben's going to talk about trees in his park strip, Ton. I know that's something near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, it can be if you use the right ones.
All right, well, we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. This is the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's the Greenhouse Show on KSL. And Todd, just before we went to the break, we were talking lawns. And there's a text here I want to just respond to real quick. And the question is being asked, is there any advantage to applying humate fertilizer to lawns on a weekly or biweekly basis?
For me, that's too often. And you need to look at why you're putting them down. The humates are a little better, maybe helping thatch break down and possibly temporarily opening up the soil. There's a lot of industry people that are good horticulturists, but when you talk to researchers, sometimes they're a little bit more dubious about that. So, yeah, you can make humate applications to turf, and it can help. But is it a miracle product that's going to solve all your problems? No. You know, it's one of those things that if you have a heavy clay and you have some salts that you need to flush through, among other things, humates might be a tool in the toolbox you could use to help that process with some other things. But if your lawn is yellow, are humates alone going to fix it? Probably not.
All right. Well, there you go. There's your answer, and hopefully that helps you out. And let's move on to a little tree talk now. Ben is calling in from Saratoga Springs. And Ben, you've got a question that Ton just loves. He's in, and I can tell you, you're going to ask about planting trees in your park strip, and Ton just loves the flowering pear.
All right. Sounds good. Am I there? Can you hear me?
we can hear you just fine.
Okay. Did you hear the sarcasm dripping from Dave's mouth?
No, you're good. Thanks for taking my call, guys. I really appreciate it. I'm glad park strip plants are near and dear to your heart. So hopefully
yes,
near and dear to your heart question. So we are a first-time homeowner. We are doing a new build and digging up some holes in our park strip. We wanted to plant some. We got some Showtime crab apple trees to plant in the front. The trick that we're running into is we got about a foot of clay. It's just where I'm in Saratoga Springs, so the clay is like really nice and thick. But we're digging it down. We got about a foot down, and then we hit about a 2.5 foot at least layer of like just road base, the stuff they use to layer the asphalt with. It looks like it was just dumped in our park strip when the construction.
Well, when they build those roads, it's not like the road base just magically stops.
Yeah.
At the edge of the road, because they've got to extend it out a bit. Now, on that road base, if you pour water in your hole, does the water drain through the road base?
Yeah, it does. It doesn't.
Okay.
It doesn't hold the water.
Probably very readily. So what I would do is just plant the trees. I mean, there's really not much you can do about it, and trees are planted in this situation all the time. And okay. I would even guess that the clay you're digging through may not even be your native soil. In the southern end of the city, I've dug down there a little bit and helped out a little, and there's rocks everywhere. And if you're not running into rocks, then it may not even be your native soil. So, I mean, crab apples are fairly durable. If you've got some good water drainage and you could possibly put some fertilizer down in the spring, you probably will be okay.
Okay, so it's just, you know, what we're trying to do is, that sounds good. So we're digging it out and trying to dig out as much of it as we can. I'm assuming that's at least a little helpful just to, you know, dig it down to the appropriate height so the root ball is just showing above the
ground. Yeah, and so you want the graft node, the graft point above ground when you plant.
Right, okay.
You know, and that road base, it's well drained enough that there's not a lot of nutrients in it, but you've got a weird situation where you have this clay cap on top and then super well-drained soil underneath.
That's
and
right.
I think that you have enough clay there that the road base, once you get the clay wet and get things irrigated, will probably at least be moist. And so it's not that it's an ideal situation, but I personally might just roll with it.
All right. So they're not going to like... I guess the thought there is, again, you know, we don't want to, the fear would be, right, if you plant them and then, you know, 10, you know, 5, 10 years from now, whatever, they're they're tapping out and dying, right? Which
well, you know, and that's happen, something I can't promise, but
sure,
what they'll
yeah.
most likely do is root under the sidewalk, and so they won't heave it, but they'll root under the sidewalk, and those roots go where water and nutrients are. So they're not going to root right. under the road, and so you would have the trees there, and 60 or 70% of the root mass would actually be in your lawn area.
Okay. All right, so it's, like you say, not ideal, but it's we can probably just roll with it and give them
yeah.
some good.
Yeah, and given the qualities of crab apples, they're some of our more durable trees. And this isn't an ideal situation, but I've seen trees planted in worse.
Okay. Okay.
All right, Ben.
That sounds good. Appreciate your guys' help. We'll see what we're going to do. But yeah, so your thought is just plant them in there. Plant them on that stuff and then
yeah, as long as you have water draining through and you have clay around there, I don't think it's a horrid situation. You may take some soil samples of the clay over to BYU just to have them tested or mail them up to USU to make sure they're not too salty. But like I said, everywhere you drive in your subdivision and you see trees in this park strip, do you imagine the situation's any different?
Probably not. No, I would imagine it's very similar.
And in the entire city, I mean, anywhere you have an HOA that's requiring these park strip trees, same darn thing, you know, 90% of the time.
Yeah, so they can grow, and it's not like they're not growing in similar.
Yeah, your bigger concerns are salt. You know, if you're on a main thoroughfare and you have snowplows throwing salty snow and slush, that can be a concern. Mm-hmm. Saratoga Springs sometimes has wells that are fairly shallow and over time can build salts up in clay soil. But in and of itself, I'm not super worried.
Got it.
All right.
Okay.
Good luck with that, Ben.
You guys are super helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, we're happy to help. And to be clear, Ton, and to be fair here, there's nothing wrong with the flowering pear. It's a great tree. In fact, it's the tree in front of my house. But the problem is it's the tree in front of a lot of people's
state
house.
Tree. Yeah.
Yeah.
A flowering pear is one that was introduced in the 70s, 60s and 70s, the old Bradford. Beautiful tree, red fall color, beautiful flowers. The fruit drop in the middle of the winter. So, you know, there's a lot of positives. But a lot of them can get fire blight in them, and they've been so heavily planted that if we have a pear disease come through that they're susceptible to, then because of the monoculture planting, there's that. Then we're finding that a lot of the older cultivars, especially Bradford and a few others, are highly susceptible to branch breaking. So you'll get this 30-foot high, you know, tree that's just gorgeous. And in 2 years, every branch just folds down on itself in wind and snow. And so flowering pears are kind of running their course. You know, a little bit more modern varieties like Cleveland, Chanticleer are still being commonly planted that are more narrow and the branches are a little bit more resistant to breaking. But it's just one of those situations to where we found something that grew well in our alkaline soil. Instead of just planting some, it's like, hey, let's do entire subdivisions with this tree. Why don't we go out to Tooele and then we'll go down to St. George and do the same thing? And it's just like, come on, guys. There's
right.
like 50 other trees that'll do as well that are pretty.
Right.
And we're going to roll with Bradford pear.
Okay. All right, well, we need to jump out and take a break here, get some news, traffic, and weather at the bottom of the hour. We've got 1.5 hour left in the Greenhouse Show today. We've got a couple calls. Andrew and Nader on the line waiting to chat, and this is your last chance to get in this week, and we'll be back. Oh, let me give the number. It's KSL Talk, so if you have a question, just give us a shout there. We'll be back right after news, traffic, and weather with the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow the letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.